We're joined now by Canadian new media artist Maria Michaels. She's a PhD candidate in the art department at RPI. Maria works across sculpture, digital media, engineering, and the sciences, creating human-powered installations that invite participation and inquiry into industrial and ecological processes. Maria, would you please describe how you got into working with art and ecology? What were your influences and inspirations?
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm very pleased to be here. How did I get into art and ecology? 2004, I decided to go back to school at Arizona State University, and I discovered a medium called environmental art. There was a fairly young history, not a long history, but I hadn't heard of it before. And so my two interests in environmentalism and art suddenly merged. I was, for a very long time, a backcountry traveler, skier, mountaineer, climber. So I had seen firsthand what resource extraction was doing to wildlands. And I was very active in environmentalism and leading a leave no trace type of existence and education. But I'd never considered putting it together in art. And I think doing my master's brought that together. And I've never looked back. I switched my practice from doing cultural and personal identity issues and focused specifically and only on environmental issues.
So a little bit, did you do your master's?
In Arizona.
In Arizona. And now you're up here in Troy, New York?
Right.
At RPI doing a PhD.
Correct. I've come back to school after a hiatus or after working as an artist for 7 years.
Okay. What's the overarching themes of your work? What are some of the projects that you're working on?
So I focused for about 10 years on resource extraction, primarily around fossil fuels and energy production, and an expansive view of what is energy production. And I connected it. I realized through doing research that energy doesn't exist in a bubble of its own. It's connected to so many different systems, and it's connected to other resources. Like, for example, the connection between energy and water in the desert, for example, is very specific there. And energy and topsoil, for example, in the Midwest, where we grow our food. These energy and all of these systems and these resources that we rely on to live are intertwined. There's a lot more to it, but in a nutshell, that's what I wanted to address as the overarching theme. Now, I built these human-powered sculptures. They were basically, I needed some form of interactivity. So I would build things like a boat with a rowing machine in it, or a railway hand car that people pumped. And these objects generate electricity. So the installations are basically inert and dark, unless people come in to the gallery, interact with these, and power them. So it really touches on issues of labor that is very much a part of both our energy systems and our economic systems and our social systems. It's a lot of layering.
I want to ask you, does this mean the people who come in do some rowing?
Yep. They become performers. They become actors in the installations. They are intrinsic to making and activating these installations. So they power the installations and what's going on. There could be a pump pumping water with plants. Plants will die if people don't come in and operate the railway handcar. There are photographs or videos or whatnot that's going on that relate to and connect the dots of these issues. And without people engaging, physically engaging, and understanding what it means to generate electricity, the installations don't happen. They're not activated.
That sounds really exciting to me. Usually you go to see some art and you look at it, but this one, you get involved.
You have to be involved.
That's just really marvelous. You know, you work out in wilderness areas, and now you've come to the dense Northeast. It's hard to say it's dense when we live up near the Adirondacks and, yeah. and the Southern Plateau area, but nonetheless, we're having big problems with the oil trains coming in and the fact that railroads tend to go through the poorest parts of the old industrial cities. Tell us something about how you connect with that.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because that is specifically why I chose RPI and this new body of work that I'm engaging with. So now I'm engaging with communities directly. I want to work with specific issues that affect them. What brought me to RPI, what brought me to this region and this new body of work is the oil trains. And so now I'm looking at not just energy extraction, but also its infrastructure. And so when I first started working with the Ezra Prentice community in Albany, I thought it was going to be specifically the trains. But what ended up happening, what I discovered while going to the meetings and talking to people, it was air quality. The problem is bad air quality and multiple sources, not just the trains. The other community at the other end of the rail is Saskatchewan. And a small community, they are rural versus urban. They are primarily agrarian, but they rely on the oil industry up there. So I wanted to work with both communities. So I spent some time in Saskatchewan this past fall, getting to know people there. And I'm at the point now where I'm realizing there's connections here. Even though they're completely different communities, there's a connection. They're dealing with air quality issues as well, but they are specific to the burning of coal and the extraction of oil.
So you were in Saskatchewan, you've come to Albany. What's it like to be an artist who's working in a science and an art community and these projects? How does it art bring together the interdisciplinary projects?
So for me, this is really exciting. A lot of the systems that I build, I have to teach myself certain engineering technologies, whether it's computers, computational, electronics, or even mechanical. A lot of the human-powered stuff was all mechanical. Where I find it exciting is my learning of these disciplines, but it's now crossed into a different layer of interdisciplinarity, and that's working with some of the scientists, or not, I shouldn't say working with, but working alongside the DEC, the Department of Environmental Conservation, who is doing a comprehensive air monitoring study at the port. Working alongside with them, and I'm building my own, you know, air quality monitoring toys, essentially, building on toys, working with kids, while they're doing their monitoring and asking, how can I be a bridge? They wanted to connect with the community. I wanted to communicate the science a little better. So it's, for me, there's multiple layers. There's a personal interest in the sciences to learn to inform my projects, but also in how can I be that bridge and the learning that I learned to share with the community and then somehow bring it closer to the science. So science and art are an integral part now of my practice, as is community. And I really feel like these things can build capacities, can build communities through the different avenues and disciplines that can help solve a problem, essentially.
Do you have any examples of that?
Sure. This past spring, I prototyped these air quality monitoring rovers. Basically, I took remote control trucks and outfitted them with sensors and what's called an Arduino. It's a microcontroller that is, you attach a lot of attachments to it. And I also attached what's called a cell card to it. So it would send data to my website. I worked with some grad students at St. Rose where we built a database. And so we collected this data. And though these sensors are not the super really, really expensive sensors like the scientists have, they engage the kids that I worked with, because I approached a village to do an after-school program with kids. And so we built these, and then we deployed them. And we invited the DEC scientists last April for Earth Week to come along and bring their devices. And it was a real, it was really exciting to see the excitement of the participants, but also having the adults come along too. But having data is one thing. What's the story behind the data? And so now the second part of the project that I worked with youth to record oral histories of elders. What's it like to live here? How long have you lived here? So we're building a narrative and a story around not just this data that may or may not be accurate per se. It may show us, you know, when there's like a ping really high, there's something out there, which then you can say, okay, we need to have better instrumentation to take a look at what's out there. But to have the community engaging with this scientific methodologies in an artistic way that they can somehow have an understanding and have, I guess you could say, agency and a voice to be able to feel confident about that they're getting involved too.
You know, one of the things I find really interesting, I'm a fairly old person around here. Yeah, I'm 72 now. But I remember that art had to be an inspired individual working by themselves, producing esoteric stuff that you were supposed to appreciate. And just in the last couple of years, we had this really incredible art project called Breathing Houses.
Breathing Lights.
Breathing Lights. Yeah. And people said, well, what is this for? You're putting lights in empty buildings, vacant buildings, and then you're causing lights go back and forth as if they're breathing. What does this do? But what it did is really enlivened all three cities, Albany, Troy, and Schenectady. It really caused people to be much more aware of their neighborhood. This sounds like you're doing something like that.
I think art has the ability. It's not about just the creator being inspired. It's about how can the creator inspire others to see the world in a broader, expansive way, whatever that sort of world or picture frame might be. I think when you also engage people on a level that's not just distant within a gallery. You're not present. Your work is present, and it does speak. And I totally understand its work can speak for itself and should speak for itself. At the same time, we are in different times, and art is not just this one particular practice. There are multiple practices, and I think artists have really taken it on over the last 30, 40 years. Contemporary art has changed, and it continues to change. And there are no boundaries to what that might be. The definition of art needs to expand. It needs to change, just like our societies change.
We certainly saw that with our earlier guest, Ira, who is using video, using film to tell the stories of his people and current situation. It's a really marvelous thing to live in an age when everybody can participate in art.
It's accessible, and I totally understand. I used to be a documentary filmmaker, and one of the things that I witnessed was the change in the technology. The technology was very expensive, and then it became very accessible, and everybody could make a film. And I think that was very key. Technology can enable this to happen. And I'm seeing it now with the fact that instrumentation can be built in a DIY manner. And you can buy all of these things to be able to, you know, work through the problems of putting together these devices yourself.
So what is your next project, and where do you see this research in art taking you?
So I'm still going to be working on the PhD for the next couple of years. And what I'm hoping is that using this oral history and citizen science methods in one community, I want to be using that, try it out also in the Saskatchewan community. And then a large exhibition is planned for the summer of 2019, and perhaps somehow I can find a way to connect these two communities. But beyond that is, who are the communities along the train line from here to there? Could I engage some of these communities along the way too and build alliances?
That was Canadian New Media artist Maria Michaels.